You're listening to Squash University. Here are your hosts, Jackson Bragman and Gilly Lane.
Welcome into Squash University, episode 11. I'm your host, Jackson Bragman, accompanied by my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, the national champion, the man who is anxiously and nervously watching the Liverpool Football Club. Is it Liverpool FC? Is that the official name?
Oh, yeah.
As they are dueling against Fulham right now in Premier League play. It is Gilly Lane who is joining me via the Zoom machine on this Sunday morning. Gilly, how are you doing? What's the word and what's going on?
I'd be a lot better if we were catching Arsenal in goal differential right now. And for some reason, we always play terrible at Craven Cottage. Fulham's like that team that always plays you well. They're tough to play at home. So we're kind of struggling here. We've been struggling for the last two weeks, which is brutal. Yeah, totally. If people don't know, actually, I was saying to you before the show, I follow Liverpool Football Club as closely as I do the Phillies and the Eagles. So for someone from Philadelphia to say that an English Premier League club, they follow just as much as their home teams, I don't know if that happens a lot. I love football. I love how the managers have to manage, you know, so many different cultures. They have people from all around the world. They're managing different styles. And I think the makeup actually compares to college squash a lot. So, you know, we're recruiting players from all over the world. And these teams are combining talents from seven different continents, and they, you know, have to fit them seamlessly into this unit. So, but I've been a fan of Liverpool since 2005. And so Steven Gerrard was my guy. So hopefully we can pull it through here. And if we win, we're tied with Arsenal top of the table for points. So,
well,
big match.
Gilly, I have to ask, what do football managers do? Because I see them on the sidelines. They usually have their puffer coats and they're kind of pacing, maybe arms behind their back. There's a lot of pointing. There's a lot of yelling. There are 100,000 fans all like in a stadium structure, 100,000 voices pounding down on you all. And the chance, that's why one thing I love about English football is the chance are wonderful. And then I think that in many ways, English sports fans are much better and much more enthusiastic than American sports fans. But I'm curious as to what the managers do, because there's a lot of yelling from the sidelines. Do the players hear what are the players trying to lip read while they're making their runs? Because I can't imagine that, like what is going on? What do the managers do during the games?
I think the halftime talks and the tactical talks, you know, they're probably the most important, right? So you think about it, compare it to our, you know, they get a little bit more time than our 90 seconds to 2 minutes in between games. But tactically, they do such a good job, I think, at halftime of making the switches that they need. But you just see Pep and Klopp on the sidelines just constantly yelling. And Pep says, pass the ball.
Hey, play.
Obviously, whatever he's doing is working, because City are a juggernaut. And then, he coached Barcelona. He coached Bayern Munich, so he's coached some pretty amazing teams. So also has some amazing players. Yeah, but I think tactically, their assistants are astute. Like their assistants, are given a lot of responsibilities, and I think the players know who to look to on the sidelines when they're making changes. So it's something that, you know, they've done in preseason and they're doing in training all the time. So it's something that they're comfortable with. They're looking over. It's almost like, you know, when you're not supposed to be giving signs, coaching in squash, but players are always looking back at their teammates. And so there's a comfort there and everything like that. But I just think the game is a major point. You know, the thing about college squash that's great is it's the only thing in terms of fandom and like the loud noises that compares to like Premier League or any pro sporting event. We talked about that before. You just don't get that in pro squash. You just don't. And there's something that's amazing. That's what makes college sport atmosphere. And you saw it this year, and cheering for your teammates, but also having fans, you know, booing and when you're playing away, and it's rowdy. It's the best.
Absolutely. Well, we will get to squash in a second, I promise. But last question on European football for you, Gilly. What do you make of Klopp leaving up and out of nowhere?
Well, it's brutal. He's like my coaching hero. His energy is amazing. Like, I feel like I wear the hat. I wear the hat because he wears the hat. When he's coaching and when I'm coaching, I always have the hat on. And just the way he inspires his players, they talk about it all the time. Like the connection that he has with the group is something I've always tried to emulate, and I just love his passion and his intensity for things that he does, and he goes at everything like 1,000%. So it's absolutely brutal because I really wanted to watch a game live with him coaching, and I'm never going to be able to do that with Liverpool, which is unfortunate, right? He's going to go down as one of the legends of Liverpool, one of the legends of coaching, but it does take its toll on you, and obviously he's a little worn down by the amount he has got to give. But it's pretty cool, like seeing Pep and Klopp go after each other, and then watching all those football documentaries. Those are the things that I love to watch, like as a coach. If I'm trying to look at things, what teams do, specifically since squash is an individual sport, but seeing these team talks that they give, you're bringing so many people from different backgrounds together. It definitely it can be relatable in so many different ways.
Yeah.
So I'm sad to see him leave. And one of the questions I asked Vieira, if he would definitely be at my table of four for people that I would love to have dinner with. So yeah, he's a legend and be one of the people in this world that I would love to meet and sit down and pick their brain.
Yeah. And we're so Gilly alluded to it a moment ago. We had an interview earlier this weekend on a Friday with the number one player for Cornell Big Red Squash, Veer Chaudhrani, who just won the CSA individual competition a couple weeks ago at the Arnold Spectator Center, capping off an undefeated season. He beat all comers, Omar Hafez and Nick Spazieri from Penn's Gilly, from Gilly's Penn team, not Penn's Gilly team, Gilly's Penn team. I'm all over the place today. From Gilly's Penn team at individuals before beating Mohamed Sharaf in the finals, who was last year's CSA individual champion. So an incredible run for Veer, and we're going to get to Veer in a moment. But before we do, I have one more question for Gilly in regards to how is everything going in your world with Penn Squash? What's the word with the boys? I know you guys are back at practice. I know you guys are getting easing back into some off season work, and everyone's about to head home for the summer. So what have you guys been focusing on in practice? By you guys, I mean you and Stuart, when you're kind of coming up with different drills, and how are you approaching things, and what's the mindset of the team right now? And then what are your kind of expectations for you guys this off season, as we're a couple of weeks away from everyone leaving campus?
Yeah, it's such an interesting time, actually. The spring is it can be hit or miss in so many different ways. We had after the Nationals, we had four or five guys prepping for the individuals, and really didn't have a practice session until Wednesday in between, and then they played the individuals, and then there's a mandatory 2 weeks off. And everyone's just kind of spent. And I remember last year after we had that loss to Trinity in the semifinal, we didn't even have practice in the spring. I mean, it was so intense the season, and everyone's so full go that they need a full break. So it's that gift and a curse. Like there's definitely strides that can be made in this time, but then also people need a break. And Jackson, like I'm totally a proponent of being a student athlete, like, and also just being a student, right? And in the spring, you've been training, you've been sacrificing so much. It's like also time to have a little bit of fun and see your friends and not be as serious as you would be during the season. And so, we've had kind of workouts from Monday through Thursday. They've been optional, and they're only an hour long. We're also regulated by what we can do time-wise by the league, so we only get a certain number of hours that we can work in the off season. Which is, I think it's around 6 hours a week. So, right now we're only at 4 hours of practice. So certain guys are taking off, certain guys are training, certain guys are working on little things. This is the time now though, to work on technical issues and, to really dive deep into the changes that you want to make. 'Cause during the season, you're not going to make massive changes to your game. No one's going to be messing with their swing in a big way. way that could in a match play, you know, for the team or in a challenge match or anything like that. So I really find that this period is such an individual period where people are making their own choices. We have guys that haven't hit all spring. We have guys that have trained, you know, have been in every session. And so, but as a coach, I think early on in my coaching career, you wanted everyone to be there. And you find that each person needs their space, they need their time, and they need to figure out how they get themselves back to, you know, a place where they're re-energized. And I think you need to refill the tank. And this is also a time to refill the tank while trying to get better as well, you know. So it's up to everyone to kind of pick and choose what they need to do.
Yeah, and Gilly, I remember you and Stewart after the national championship went on Squash Radio, which great show. Shout out Bill Buckingham. We're going to try to get him on the show very soon.
He
We're
will
going
be
to
on
make that
the
happen.
show very
We're going to
soon, no
make that happen.
doubt.
There have been rumblings of Squash Universe or Squash Radio, rather. It's the number one squash podcast by far. All the other squash podcasts suck. Okay, well, I'm not going to disagree with him, but I want to have him on. And we're gonna have a conversation about that. All I want to do is have a conversation. But you and Stuart went on that show, and what Stuart had to say is, for that Nationals week, you guys wanted to make sure that you maximize your team's performance to ensure that as many guys on your team in that top nine as possible were playing their best squash that weekend. That was very important because during the season. And Stuart kind of did the math of how many times a year, maybe three or four times at most, are your guys going to play their best squash? It's not going to happen every single match. So how can we get it so you're peaking at the right time and all of your guys are playing your best squash that weekend? And from what it sounded like is that final against Trinity, you guys were really all playing your best squash run through nine, and everyone kind of played their role, and everyone did well with that piece. Of the equation, and when you guys are playing your best squash, it's what, you know, it's arguably the most talented roster in the country. It's obviously near impossible to beat, and yeah, it was a dominant win over Trinity at the final. So I think that right now, absolutely a time to work on the technical side of the game, work on improving. What's your kind of second semester of the season and post-winter training, and you're coming down the stretch up till Nationals, just tweaking minor things and trying to make sure that you're taking care of your sleep, taking care of your diet, taking care of showing up to practice and bringing energy and bringing passion and making sure that you're maximizing your output every day so you can play your best squash, but you're not necessarily trying to change anything major about your game. So this is the time to kind of try new stuff and figure out who you are as a squash player. Is that fair? Or like, is that a fair assessment to make?
Yeah, totally. And I sometimes think less is more, you know. And I think in this world, and especially for students, everyone's kind of crunching, is doing things last minute, and there's this rush to really kind of, oh, I need to put more in because the big test is coming, right? So if you think about it, if you don't prepare for, let's say, an exam and you're cramming the night before, it's really easy to cram, you know, the night before, remember everything for the test, and guess what? You forget. But guess what? You
Right.
get graded on that. And most of the time, I will say that people are successful in that because, you know, they just need to remember that information, you know, for just a short amount of time. But what in sport, it doesn't work like that. You know, cramming right before the big match doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to play well, right? It's actually could hurt you because you end up doing too much right up into the match, and then all of a sudden you're exhausted. Or if you haven't put the appropriate amount of time in before, your preparation is not going to be where it needs to be. So even in that week leading up to the Nationals, like sometimes it was just actually taking players out of practice, making them practice less, making sure that emotionally they're good, making sure that they're physically fine, and making sure that they're mentally in the right space. And I think right now it could be the same thing. You could be working on people's technical ability and looking at tactically how they can change their approach for the summer. And how they can change their approach physically, like in terms of their training and their off-court training. But I think also you can say, wait, you need a break. Like, this is the time where I don't want you to think about squash at all. This is a time where I really, really need you to just relax, enjoy being a college student, right? And have those memories because that could put that person in a better frame of mind going forward. So I think it's up to the coach to have conversations with each of individual player, see where they need to be. and understand that some people need more and some people need less. And I think, again, that's our sport is individual like that. If you were coaching a soccer team, for instance, and we were talking about, the Premier League before, the springtime actually might be a really good time to put new schemes in, to put a new defensive kind of theme in. How are their formations shifting, shaping up for the fall? Are we going to try a new formation? And also giving players that might need to step in to new roles in the fall that may not have played, let's say they're a freshman, but as a sophomore needs to step into a bigger role. This is a huge time to kind of build momentum for that summer training, and also just from a confidence standpoint. So coaches are building confidence in this time, and then they come into the fall ready to go and tackle, the season that is coming up. So again, it's to each coach's own, I would say, situation and what it is that they want to accomplish in the spring, and then what it is that they have laid out goal-wise for each individual player.
Do you guys have, as a coaching staff, do you guys have a plan laid out for all your players for the off season, or do you kind of leave that up to they're going to go home and they're going to do whatever with their coaches back home, and then they come back in the fall and then they're going to kind of get back in the swing of things?
We do have a kind of very simple kind of done, on a weekly basis kind of, game plan for each player. However, we have certain players that are playing pro tournaments. We have certain players that need to work on certain areas more than others. Some may be more need to come in better shape, right? So they're going to be focusing on their physicality a lot more. So we have a generic kind of summer plan for everyone, but then we individualize it as much as possible for everyone. And we're just in our end of the year meetings, we are constantly talking about what it is our expectations are of that individual player, where they are when they come back, and kind of giving them ideas and suggestions as to what we think is the best way forward for them in the summer.
Well, it sounds like Penn Squash not going to be going away quietly, and certainly going to be in strong contention next year, 2024, 2025 CSC season. I can't wait already. I'm already fired up. And yeah, it's going to be a fun offseason of chitter chatter about Penn Squash, about Denison Squash, about college squash as a whole, and off-season shenanigans. We've got World Juniors coming up, so we're going to talk about that in the future. We've got, I know we just hired an assistant coach here at Denison, Huma Bakit, who was on the roster last year. He was doing a fifth year at Denison during first semester, graduated, went home for a bit, and now he's back as an assistant coach. So he'll be at World Juniors doing a little bit of recruiting for us. And yeah, we're kind of in peak recruiting season right now for the 2025 high school class. Would be the 2029 Denison class, potentially, if some guys decided to come here. And I know, Gilly, you're right in the swing of that as well, trying to figure out your roster in the years to come. And that leads to a lot of different off-season discussions, or that should lead to a lot of different off-season discussions as well. We've got a bunch of great interviews lined up and a lot of exciting things in the not too distant future. But first, today, as we mentioned earlier, we had the opportunity to interview 4-time All-American Skillman Award winner this year. He joined you on that prestigious list, Gilly, of former Skillman Award winners and CSA Individuals National Champion. It is Virchow Trani. Those are just a few of the most prestigious honors that he received this year. The list is much longer. I kind of went through a few more when introducing him for our interview today. But Gilly Veer, a stand-up guy. I mean, I couldn't believe, I kind of tried to leave him alone at individuals. It was a pleasure for me to be there. I loved every second of being there. And he kind of won his match. He didn't kind of win. He won. He won 4 against Muhammad Sharaf, who's a fantastic player, who's probably playing at a top 100 level. When you talk about PSA guys right now, is a phenomenal squash player. And Veer looked really strong out there against him. And Veer actually called me over. I was kind of waved at him from a distance about half an hour after the match, and he called me over, spent about 20 minutes talking to me, and he couldn't have been nicer. And it was really nice to have him on the show. First time on Squash University. It was my second time interviewing him, and what a class act. It was great to chat with him.
Jackson, you keep saying that you're shocked that all these people pull you aside and talk to you. You're a celebrity now. You're one of the big time announcers.
I'm getting a big head from
big time announcers in our game. You got to embrace it. No, Veer, just talk about, definitely the best player in college squash this year. What an absolutely Just classy guy he is, and represents our game so well. It was so nice to talk to him. Obviously, I coached against him for a career, and saw you know what he was capable of doing, you know, up close and personal. Obviously, you know, competing against him with the Penn and Cornell matches. He was 3-0 against us this year. He actually beat all of our top three. You know, and he played the you know, ended up playing Nick and Omar and Salman. So you know, it was interesting. You know, we're talking about his run and the confidence. He suffered a little injury. We'd go into that, and I won't go too much into it, as I want to let the listeners, you know, hear what he had to say. But it was interesting to see his thought process through the ankle roll against Spiz in the semifinals. And what was interesting to me, because witnessing it from outside, and I didn't get to share this with him, but it looked like at one point that he was going to be able to be broken. And I thought, you know, talking to Stuart, if Nick could have held on a little bit more, and Veer played incredibly well, couldn't miss, finding his targets, we thought that if he could have stuck in just a little bit longer, he might have been able to break. And like that little moment where there was a little bit of weakness with that injury, we're like, oh, maybe this is our time to really get into him. But he actually said the opposite. And so it was really interesting to kind of hear about that moment, how it helped him, you know, get through. And then obviously just talking to him about his goals and, you know, his path and, you know, very unassuming as well. And obviously you know, hearing about when that light bulb went off and when he thought, wow, I could actually win the individuals here. You know, I could be someone that could put my name up with the greats. And like you said, in your intro, he won everything, you know, as an individual can win. You know, obviously didn't, you know, necessarily get a chance from the team perspective, but from an individual standpoint, accomplished everything a player could in college, and just an absolute class act.
Totally plays the game the right way. And that's part of the Skillman Award. And he's akin to you in that way. Absolutely. And once again, pleasure to talk to you. And you really underplayed it. I thought I really, that was my favorite part of the interview, was him to kind of talking about those matches and the ankle roll and the mindset and the mental strength that requires to fuel him. I mean, he once again, I don't want to give too much away, but in a way, he almost felt better after that, because he said he could play more free and more loose. And he goes a little bit more in depth on that. And I applaud him for that, because mentally, it's something that obviously requires a lot of toughness and a lot of strength. And I do feel that he underplayed that a bit. And he did mention that freshman, sophomore year, he doesn't think that he would have had the capability to push through that match the way he did. But freshman year, coming in from India, not really taking care of his diet or his sleep, and kind of was immensely talented, but didn't really lock in or wasn't as disciplined as maybe he could have been. And juxtapose that to this year, where he took first semester off, was playing PSA events, and then comes back second semester playing for the Cornell Big Red and picking up huge wins against guys like Salman Khalil, one of the best freshmen, if not the best freshman in college squash this year. The other two Penn guys, he beat Muhammad Sharaf twice, who won the CSA individuals last year and was arguably the second best player in the country. He took on all comers and he knocked everybody off. He played outstanding squash throughout the whole year, and it was largely because of the sacrifices that he's made in the last year and the mental strength that he's built up over the last year to get to this point. So couldn't have been happier for Veer.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at the stats, he and Gordon Lam, you know, in the top bracket, were the only players to go undefeated all year, which is pretty insane. You know, Gordon was a beast for Princeton at the bottom of their lineup. We lost him, I think, all three times we played him this year, where there was scrimmage and the dual match and the semifinals. But I mean, Beer was undefeated at one. I mean, there's not much else you can say about that, right? And so he's getting everyone's best every time out. You know, and again, like you said, he's doing it the right way. I foresee a really good pro career for him. He's got a great team around him. You know, he's going to be sticking around with David Palmer. You know, one of the toughest guys ever to play on the PSA Tour. Unbelievable coach. And has done wonders, you know, for Veer in terms of how he approaches his game. And I know they'll continue to work closely together. But his experience in the fall semester on the PSA Tour, is going to help him. You know, he's not really coming in as a rookie. I don't feel like, you know, he's played a lot in the tour. He knows what to expect. I envision him being top 50, you know, within a year and a half, 2 years. And, you know, it was just great to have him on. And I think the viewers are going to love listening to what they have to, he has to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, pleasure to talk to Veer this week. Last little bit of housekeeping for the people. Next time you hear Gilly and I's beautiful voices in your ears, we will be coming at you with a mailbag special here on Squash University in a couple of weeks. So please head over to @GLSquash on Instagram, or Gilly from Philly on Instagram, or @JacksonBragman on Instagram, or @BragmanBreakdown on Instagram, or best of all, @SquashUniversityPod on Instagram. Please follow the Squash University Instagram page. DM us any questions that you have that you would like us to answer on the mailbag episode next week. We already have a couple good ones that we have stored away in the vault, and we're waiting to build up a nice little mailbag for the next episode.
I have to share this first question though, Jackson, because we won't answer it now, but. One of your teammates has asked, would Drunk Gilly beat Jackson in a squash match? I'm just going to leave it there.
Great question.
I'm just going to leave it there.
Again, Gilly, you have no prior broadcasting training. Am I correct? Because that was a hell of a cliffhanger. That was really well done from you. And now the people are going to have to tune in a couple of weeks here to find out the answer to that riveting question.
Send us your questions. Send it to our Instagram page. Follow us on Instagram. Looking forward to our mailbag issue, our episode. And, you know, that will be episode number 12 for Jackson and I on Squash University. Looking forward to a great summer. But the mailbag episode will be amazing. And we will have an answer to that question on our next episode.
I'm really looking forward to it. It might be a little bit off the beating path. We're going to get perhaps a little quirky. We're going to have some fun with it. And I'm looking forward to it. And we're going to keep rolling here at Squash University. Thank you guys for tapping in one more time at Squash University Pod. Go check us out on Instagram. And in the meantime, here is our interview with the wonderful Cornell Big Red. Number one, he is Veer Chotrana. Okay, we are now joined by one of the most exciting young squash players in the world from Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, by way of Mumbai, India. He is a four-time first-team All-American, Ivy League Freshman of the Year, Ivy League Player of the Year. He's a Skillman Award winner as of last month, an award given out to a senior CSA player who has showcased exemplary on-court ability and sportsmanship throughout one's college career. Thank you, CSA website. And we actually have two Skillman Award winners on this call, so which is pretty cool. And after an undefeated season in dual match play for the Cornell Big Red, he is your 2024 CSA Men's Individual Champion. It is Veer Chotrani. Veer, thank you for joining us on the show this week.
Thank you, guys. Very excited to be here.
Jackson, that's a long intro. We should just call him the best player in college squash this year.
The best player in college squash. He did not lose a match. He chippity chopped a couple of Gilly's guys, much to Gilly's dismay, and en route to a commanding win at the CSA individual championships this year. And Veer, it was your fifth year at Cornell. You kind of took the first semester off your training. You're getting ready to go pro after your collegiate career was done, but you came back for second semester because you really wanted to win individuals, and you beat all of college squash's best. You were by far the best player in the country this year, and it's been well documented how important winning this event was for you. And I know that you came back for a fifth year instead of fully diving into the PSA, largely because of this individuals event. So that all that being said, why was this an event that you had circled on your calendar? And now that it's over, how does it feel as you are about a month removed from your big win?
I remember last year when I lost out at George Crown, I was really disappointed because I knew I had a chance last year as well. So I had a goal in my mind that 1 year from then, you know, individual title is my biggest goal and I'm going to work towards it. And I actually didn't take a fifth year. I'm still technically a senior because I took two semesters off in the last 5 years. So this is actually my senior year. So Yeah, the last fall I took it completely off. I played PSAs. I trained really hard. I just focused on my game and just my fitness in general. And yeah, I came back in January. Just wanted to play my best squash, and I'm so happy it worked out.
Yeah, Veer, I mean, what an accomplishment, to kind of finish your college career with that championship. And obviously I think you know that I'm a huge fan of yours and how you conduct and carry yourself and play. Talk about that experience though last year. You talked about, losing to George. George went on, a really good streak in that tournament, really tough to beat. What did you take from that? And then how did you apply it, obviously, in the summer? And then was that always in the back of your mind that you had to avenge that loss? And is that really what was motivating you?
Yeah, so I remember I was playing George and I was up 2 love and I thought I was in control and gonna win the match, but then he just showed how strong he was mentally and just broke me down. And after the match, I was actually really disappointed that I was not able to keep up with him. And yeah, that really motivated me to push hard in the summer. I did a lot of work on my physicality and my endurance because I knew if I had a little bit more of that in my game, I could have probably gone over the finish line against George. And yeah, I kept doing that over the whole course of the year. With my PSAs, I try to play as many matches as I can before the CSA season just to get ready. And yeah, when I came back in January, I wasn't feeling my best in the beginning, but then started to feel better as every match went on. And yeah, it came to life in the end, and I'm so happy.
Well, if you weren't feeling your best when you came back, you chopped up our boy at the Penn Squash Center, Salman Khalil, in his first ever collegiate match. He wasn't feeling too great after that. So if you weren't feeling, if you're still finding your way, you're doing pretty well at that time. Your game, it seems your severity was higher when you came back. Talk about how playing those PSAs in the fall, the work that you were doing there, you had success in those PSAs in the fall. We were all following your results. You jumped up the rankings. Talk about how that attributed, to that January start for you.
I played around 8 PSAs in the fall and put in a lot of work with David. So all the work he put with me was basically trying to keep my game more attacking and stepping up on the tee and trying to cut off as much as I can. And that's what I worked a lot upon. And all the PSA matches gave me great experience against some of the best. And I remember I played a guy from Mexico. He's top 30, Leonel Cardenas. And yeah, that was my best match of my fall semester outside of college squash, obviously. I should have won that match. I was up 2-1, so that gave me a great exposure to play against the best and to learn from them as to why they are that good and what's lacking for me. And yeah, I talking about severity, I do a lot of solo practice to just, put in those drops every day and really work on my short game more than anything, because I know I can get a good length and then I can go short. So yeah, with David, that's what's been the goal for the last 1 year. And obviously, getting more physically fit is the biggest thing in the game. So I keep trying to work on that.
Yeah, I want to talk about DP and what you guys have been working on in a little bit here. But I first want to ask you about individuals in this run because I'm just looking at these results, and I was hoping we could go kind of match by match, and you could break down like what you're thinking and how you felt after all of these results. Because round one, for the one seed, for the number one overall seed, that's a tough draw to play Serna in the first round, the Drexel number one from Bogota. He's currently ranked top 200 in the world. So to play him first round is brutal. You get past him in 3 games. That second game, I remember, gave you a little bit of trouble, but largely you could come out of that unscathed. And then in the quarters and the semis, you knock off the two guys that won national championships the week prior under Gilly. You beat Hafez, who was playing number two for that title team, and then you beat Spazieri, who's playing number one. And back first semester, obviously, you played solid, or back at the start of second semester in team play, you got the win over Solomon in his first collegiate match. So obviously, two big results there. I know Nick was completely rolling the season. I think second semester he won every match he played except for when he played Sharaf in the championship, who you ultimately played in the team championships, who you ultimately played in the individual finals. He played Mohamed Sharaf, who was able to notch the first game, came out guns a blazing, but the consistency from you was too much for Sharaf, and you ended up winning that in four. And Sharaf lost two matches all season. He lost to you when Cornell played Trinity in the regular season, and he lost to you in the individual finals. Other than that, he won every other match he played. So I think without question, you took on all comers. It was not as many will say, a Mickey Mouse road to the individual championships. You took on all comers and you knocked them all off. So I mean, could you maybe, I mean, it's a heck of a gauntlet. Can you take me through that week and kind of, you seem very relaxed on court. You seem very kind of calm, cerebral, almost like a little bit robotic under pressure, just kind of next point, next point. I mean, can you take me through your mindset throughout the week and the ebbs and flows of all those matches?
I remember the team championship weekend. I was pretty disappointed that that our team didn't, make the top eight, and I was playing slightly weaker teams than I wanted to play. And I was watching the final between Penn and Trinity. I was like, I wish I played some of these guys this weekend. I really wanted to do that. And then when I went back to Cornell for that couple of days before coming back to individuals, I really put in a couple of good sessions and was trying to mentally, refocus and get ready for the weekend. And when I got to Philly, I was I had a good practice and I was feeling good with my game. I like the glass court a lot at the Spectre. And yeah, from the first match onwards, I just didn't want to think that, I'm seeded number one and I should be winning this. I didn't want to think like that. I just wanted to play every match, every point, as well as I can. And I remember the first match, a funny story, when I played Nico Cerna, when I was warming up, one of my contact lenses fell off from my eye and I couldn't find it. So the first game, basically, I played with one contact lens, and I couldn't see from this side of the eye, and I don't know how the ball was going in. And then, luckily, my parents were there that weekend, so my mom was able to get me my other pair of contact lenses before I put them on. And then the second game, I was not playing well at all. Wasn't playing the level I wanted to, and I remember I was down 10-5. Something like that, and came back, managed to get that game, and that was really a good feeling because I didn't want to play, an extra game. And then, yeah, I managed to close it out in three. Felt good with myself, and then I knew I had a tough task playing Omar later on. He's really good, exciting, young. He's really fast, so I knew it was going to be a hard one. And it was like the first game he came out guns blazing and he was up like 6-7-1 or something. I was unable to figure out what he was doing, and then slowly I got in a few good rallies in him, and I got put him under some pressure, and even though he took the first game, I knew that if I kept going at this intensity, I could break him down, and that's what happened, and I was really happy at the end of that. And then, of course, Spiz was one guy I really wanted to play in my college career at least once, because I've seen him over the years. I played him once back at the British 4 years ago. It was a hard match, and I knew that this guy's going to be really good in college. And of course, he has been for the last couple of years, not losing much. So yeah, before Spiz match, I was trying to be mentally ready, because I knew he saw this as a big opportunity to go and get a big win for himself. And yeah, just the way I played that day, it was some of my best in the season, especially with taking the ball in the front. Like, I don't know how it didn't hit the tin. A lot of them, yeah, just went up, and it was relieving. I didn't expect that. And even though I remember in the second game, I had a little incident with my foot where I rolled my ankle. It wasn't anyone's fault. It was just accidental. So I was a little worried about it, but luckily it wasn't horrible. So I could come back and, refocus, and started to go more short, and luckily it all went in. So yeah, that was one of my best matches of the season for sure. And of course, playing Sharaf is not easy. He's so skillful and talented, and he can hit nicks, from anywhere. So I knew that I tried to focus on what I did with him when I played him in season, and try to do the same in the final. Even though I lost the first game, I knew that if I can keep up the intensity and keep the rallies long and hard, he eventually breaks down, and that's exactly what's happened. And yeah, I mean, getting the win was surreal, like being the first one from Cornell is always amazing, so that was great.
Yeah, Jackson, I don't know if you saw the match with Spiz, but we actually saw when Beer actually rolled his ankle, and definitely was a little t it could you could tell he was trying to feel it out. He was so on that day. I mean, when he talked about like he couldn't miss, like he couldn't miss, and I'm talking about inch perfect drops that Spiz would kind of look back at us and say like, well, what am I supposed to do here? And I go, well, we don't know. Like he's not missing. So like, what do you want me to tell you? But talk about like that moment, what you're telling yourself when you did roll your ankle, because there was a couple points where you weren't moving your best. And then I also think what people may not be aware of how hard it is to then come back the next day and play someone like Sharaf in the final with probably something that's very sore in that ankle, testing your mobility. But it might also make you play better because you have to play smarter, you have to be more precise, that you have to put the ball in good areas to know that you can move in and out of the front left or front right, whatever it may be. Talk about how that like your mentality, did your mentality change at that time, or did you just kind of keep going on with your business?
I actually felt I felt less pressure after that moment. I felt that I could play more freely because if I was able to get a few balls back with a slightly injured ankle, that would, mentally annoy my opponent more than me. And if I could see that and I can sense it, it was good for me because I know if I can put more weight on my other leg. And pick up the balls would that would help, and that's what I tried to do. I used my left leg quite a bit, and managed to keep the rallies going. And that I could see when I played Spiz and Sharaf, they were getting a little mentally annoyed with themselves that how they're not winning the points here. And then whenever I was hitting a good length, I knew that I don't want to keep the rallies long because my foot was slightly hurting, so I needed to finish the point as fast as I can. And like I said, luckily it all went in that day. Yeah, so I usually think that if I was injured, I wasn't feeling the pressure. I was just like felt, in fact, I felt mentally better, more free with my game, and started to put more pressure on my opponent because if I can get every ball back, that's great. And that's what exactly happened with Sharaf. He I wasn't. I felt me at my ankle in the first game, and he was obviously going for everything, and it all went in from his side. But then I could see it that keeping rally slightly long, and that mentally really broke him down. And same with Spiz, like I tried to do the same, and it worked out.
It's interesting that you said that because you said that to me at our dual match where you said you almost didn't play. Remember you told me that you said I almost didn't play today. I didn't know whether I was going to because of my leg. And I'm like, almost didn't play. I mean, you couldn't miss. I was the best I've ever seen you play. So maybe it does. Maybe I need to tell my players to have an injury. Maybe I'll relax them a little bit more.
Yeah,
So
how
when I played
bad are you
Salman,
go? Yeah, sorry, so sorry.
when I played Salman the night before when I was practicing, both my adductors really felt something. And even when I went back to the hotel, I wasn't sure. I was like, this is really weird because I had a good week of training and my right adductor was like really sore and I wasn't able to lunge. And then the next morning I put some tape, I put some like some sprays and shit like that. And I was like, let me just go try, warm up and not think about it. If you think about it, then it's really gonna affect your game. I was like, just go, just play. Like you have no choice. And yeah, actually, like I said, I feel less pressured when I don't think about the pain and I just play freely.
Yeah, and how bad was it? Because to me, to Gilly's point, I remember there were a couple points there where you could see maybe you were lunging on the opposite foot that you traditionally wouldn't, or you were kind of easing back into it. But then it felt like you got all your adrenaline back, and you couldn't tell. By the next game, I couldn't tell anything was wrong. Like, and once again, your face, it's so mentally taxing, I'm sure, for your opponents, because you're like a killer. Your facial expressions don't change. It's just like always the same. So to me, I almost forgot about the injury, let alone the next day when you're playing Shiraf. I mean, did you still feel it? Did you have to go through kind of a more extensive warm-up the following day? I know you were saying like David wanted you to get to the courts like over 2 hours early, and you're like, David, like relax, let me do my thing. But like how did you navigate that kind of throughout the rest of the semifinal match and then the finals?
When the ankle roll happened, I was obviously a little worried about it, because when it happens at that point, you really feel the pain, and then you go out for the break, and you let it rest. And then luckily the guy, the trainer at the center, he wrapped it up so hard and tight that there was no movement. So whenever I lunged on the right foot, I would feel it a little bit, but I would not think about it. I was like, that much is okay, as long as it doesn't, affect it a lot. And then any small lunges on my right foot were okay, not any long lunges, because I was a little stressed about it. And then, yeah, when I after the match with Spiz, I took a look after it a lot. I iced it. I try to recover as well as I can, and basically just icing it and not putting any weight on the foot, is exactly what I did. And the next morning, I was luckily wasn't super sore with my ankle. I got it wrapped up again pretty hard and tight. And I didn't feel it. I did the same warm up I did against Biz, and just try to move my foot as much as I can, just to get the blood flow. And that's exactly it turned out to be similar the next day as well.
And when you're in like kind of a little bit of pain like that, mentally, do you have to like fire yourself up and like push, or are you just kind of like stay steady? Like how do you navigate that mentally? Because obviously it's not that you play more freely, and to me it's amazing that you can say that. Are you trying in that moment to be very relaxed, or I guess how like what when you get hurt, it's not fun. It's adversity, and it's like how do you channel that into positive energy where you're still able to play at a high level, even though your body has certain limitations that it didn't have prior to the injury.
Well, yeah. I mean, the goal for that weekend was to win, and I was going to do it in any circumstances. I didn't want to, that was my biggest goal of the whole year. And just for one little ankle roll, I was like, no, just forget about it, just play. Like, you're not going to stop. And that's exactly how I mentally prepared. And obviously, if my roll was a little worse, I don't know what could have happened, but whatever happened that day, I knew I could still go on. I still had it in me. And yeah, like I said, I don't think about it. I just go play my game. I feel the pain, but I was like, this is minimal, and I can push through it. And yeah, I did it. I was just mentally proud of myself that week, because in the past, I used to, like, any kind of incidents like this, I would just stop in the past. And I think just the work I put over in the last 6, 7 months, getting, physically, mentally stronger, that I think really helped to push through any kind of pain. So I was just proud of that. Yeah.
To not to switch, well, to switch gears a little bit, I mean, what Jackson reeled off about your resume, not many people have accomplished what you've accomplished. So, 5 years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, when you're heading to Cornell, was that on the goals? Was that on the list of things to achieve? Did you leave college squash as an individual champion, Skillman Award winner, which is basically like the Heisman Trophy of our sport, four-time first team All Ivy League Rookie of the Year, Ivy League Player of the Year, All American for 4 years. You're going to go down as probably one of the best players, if not the best Cornell squash player ever, to date. Talk about that. Like, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, it means a lot. Yeah, I remember freshman year, I obviously had no intentions or goals to win individuals. Did not think about that ever. Because I saw the level. I remember the guys like, Victor and Yusuf and Ali and Douglas, and the level was insane. And I was like, just being able to play against them is a big deal for me. And just to match up with them and come close would be amazing, And until last year when I lost to George, I obviously didn't think I could win individuals. It was literally that year, that weekend when I beat Marwan Tarek before George. I was like, okay, I can do it, I have it in me. I could have done it that weekend last year, because once I beat Marwan, I knew that, George hopefully should be easier than Marwan. But obviously it didn't turn out to be. But yeah, looking back 4 years, I didn't obviously expect to win individuals, because I played against some of the best players in the world right now. And just to get that experience, and obviously playing number one was a whole different feeling, playing literally guys like Victor and Yusuf, who were like top 20, and then I got to play Ali a couple of times, who's top 15 now. That experience is insane. I learned so much out of that. I just saw the difference between me and them. That is, it's so much, in every part of the game. And I was like, okay, if I have to be at that level, I need to start working towards it. And I took baby steps. I'm still taking more baby steps to get to that level one day. But yeah, that really motivated me. Like, just I had that goal in mind this year that I want to be. I want to have my name on that trophy with all those amazing players, like even in the past, like Ali Farag, Amr Khalifa, and yeah, that really motivated me and gave me the hopes that I can do it. And I put in the work, and I'm happy that it paid off.
When you made that decision, said, and felt that belief that you could do it, did you make any sacrifices? Did you have to give up certain things to in order to push yourself to get to that upper tier? I'm really interested in, especially with individual athletes when they're going after a goal, sacrifices have to be made. What changed for you on a personal level for you to get to that stature?
Yeah, I think last year in the summer really changed everything for me, because I had never trained so much in my life before. What I did in the last summer, I was here in Cornell with David, and I had 6 weeks of some of the most brutal training I've done, before. I had Saurav Ghosal and Ramit Tandon as well with me, and obviously Siva, she was here as well. So the four of us, and Charlie Lee as well, who works with David now. So four or five of us just put in so much efforts in those 6 weeks, and having them, really helped. Because I know Saurav and Ramit since I was a small kid, being from the same country. So, they motivated me, and just looking up to them since I was a kid really, motivated me to push. With them being around, training with them every day, learning from them, and putting in 6, 7 hours a day of training, really changed everything for me that summer. And obviously the PSAs I played in the fall, the wins I got, and obviously a couple of events that I won gave me a lot of confidence. And talking about sacrifices, yeah, just being, I told my parents back home that I'm not gonna be home for a bit. I just want to go and train, and because I feel really like, Indian parents are super pampering, and you get everything you want, and it's like a piece of cake, you're just sitting on bed all day. So I was like, I'm not doing this. I need to get out of here. And just being away from home is obviously hard always. You want to be with family, but at the end of the day, I think it pays off. You want to do it for them. And obviously my parents were there at the individuals weekend, so just having them around was great. They've also made so many sacrifices traveling with me since I was a kid. So yeah, that's the whole thing that really was
Yeah,
great.
that's a fantastic question from Gillian. I think that's what people don't see is below the iceberg. It's not just training hard, but it's like, what else are you giving up in terms of diet, in terms of sleep, in terms of being away from family? I think that's like something that people just don't consider enough. And I think that's, yeah, that's a huge part of ultimately of your success and how you've gotten to the point that you're at. So individuals roll around and you have that moment, finals, plank drop, match ball, you slot the drop into the forehand corner. It's a winner. You throw your racket, hands go up in the air. What are you feeling in that moment? Because it's like for it's such an unbelievable payoff for all the work you've put in. And whether you accomplish your goal or not, you've set yourself up now through this goal that you've been training so hard to achieve, even if you didn't win, let's say. You're in the best shape of your life and you're ready to go play on the pro tournament. But you do have that satisfactory moment, or that moment of satisfaction, rather, where you achieve the goal that you've been training for so hard. What does that feel like? And then the chance of VMC and your teammates are all there. I know a lot of them drove in to come support you, which is great. So yeah, tell me about how that felt.
I mean, that last shot, I don't know if you saw the point before that when it was like 8-9 or something, and he served it. I was like, if I get a serve on my racket, I'm gonna go for it. And he served it straight
You
on my
have
racket, and I
to.
snapped. I was like, I'm not gonna rally now. I just want to, finish it off. And just that last final drop shot, it just went in perfectly, and it's just a great feeling of relief, like all the work you put in, and then you get what you want at the end, with the individual title, is something that I always, it was a dream come true. Like I didn't expect it. Like I said, when I was a freshman, there was no, I never even thought that I would be in contention, like it was that kind of a mentality. But then, just having my teammates around, like nine of them drove all the way from Ithaca to Philly to watch, which was special. And then obviously coaches, my family was there as well. So just having everyone around is great, and it's just something that I'll always remember. College squash has been arguably the best thing I have done in my life, and I wish I could do it 4 years all over again. I'm just playing college squash, not studying anymore, just playing college squash. It was also being the first one from Cornell is always special, to be anything, to be the first in from your school, from an Ivy League school, is always special. And when I came back, obviously a lot of people recognized me for it. And tomorrow I actually have like this award ceremony where I'm getting something, which would be nice. So I'm excited for
What are you
that. And
getting?
I don't know, there's
Oh,
some,
that's a surprise.
there's a lacrosse player that I'm getting recognized for.
I
So
will tell you that we were there at Cornell. We played Cornell when Siva got her national championship ring from Andy Noel, and the ring was pretty sweet. So Cornell presented her with an individual national championship ring, which I'm sure Veer will be getting at some point.
get this man blanked out. Come on.
Yeah, I mean,
Last
you
thing, because
deserve it.
I know Gilly wants to ask about your team experience at Cornell, and which I do want to get to. Last thing I want to ask about individuals, because it's such a cool thing, is one of the larger than life figures of our game is a man by the name of Paul Asiante, who's just retired but still on the coaching staff of Trinity, where Sharaf obviously plays. And I remember what I watched all of your matches. I watched all of Sharaf's matches at individuals, I think, except for maybe the opening rounds. But I obviously saw Paul every time go over and shake the hand of the opponent, of whoever the Trinity guys were playing throughout the weekend. Do you remember what he said to you, or if he had any nice words or words of wisdom to offer you?
He's a legend. He's a great guy. I remember one thing he told me was, it was really sweet of him. He just said that he loves how I conduct myself on court, and my attitude towards the game is great. And yeah, it was something like that. And then he said that I got that he said I'm a champion on and off the court. So I was like, okay, thank you so much. It's really means a lot. And then actually I was back home 10 days ago for spring break. I went back home to India, and he was there. He was in India for a
Oh,
week,
wow.
and I managed to meet him once and had a nice conversation with him. And he actually came to meet, we have a lot of Trinity alums back in India, so they got him down, flew him all the way, and for I don't know for what, but he was there, and I managed to catch him one day, and it was really nice to see him. And Yeah, he's a legend. He's contributed a lot towards, squash in many ways. And yeah, it was just really nice to have him speaking highly about me. It's really
Yeah,
special.
that's awesome.
Yeah, Veer, I wanted to transition just, your experience at Cornell playing for the team. You just mentioned that you kind of almost took the question out of my mouth, but playing for Cornell, playing team squash, what was that experience like for you and just overall your experience at Cornell?
It's been unbelievable, just being a student athlete is special. You being a part of the team is of any team is extremely special. You make friends for your life, and the day you step on campus the first time, you already have say 20 to 25 friends because you're a part of a team. And that's not common for a lot of, non-student athletes. You don't have 30 friends on the first day. And having them, obviously, I've been part of four or five different teams every year and been in contact and touch with every one of them, special, all of them. Great friends, always there to support me. Even though I was better than them at squash, like they never took it to heart, and they always supported me. They were there for every match, like I said, for individuals. Nine of them drove all the way. I didn't expect that. Just for them to do that is shows that they that how close we are, and I would do the same for any one of them at any given point. So being a part of a team is obviously back in India, we don't have this. Team squash was never anything. So the first day when I got onto the team, I obviously felt a little disconnected, but as we kept moving on, we got super close, and we share our experiences, our feelings, and that's what you want in your teammates. You want to be able to share how you feel and for them to be there for you, and vice versa. So yeah, every single one of them has been extremely special and dear to me, and I'll always be there for them. And yeah, the camaraderie and the partnership we've had over the last 4 or 5 years is just been special and incredibly amazing. Yeah, like I said, team squash is so much fun. Like, I just had the best time. Just put it that way. I just had the most amazing time playing for a team and playing college squash. Just the atmosphere and the support of not just the players and the alums, but also the families, and just having so many people around is pretty insane. So yeah, it's been the best time of my life for sure.
What
Absolutely.
and during that time, would you change anything? Would you change anything during this amazing career that you've had at Cornell?
Absolutely not. I managed to win everything I wanted, and with obviously the grace of God, I achieved everything college squash had. And yeah, I wouldn't change it for anything. And if you told me that I had to do it again, I would do it again for sure.
So you're him. That's what you're telling us. You're that guy. I'm just kidding. I'm just messing with you. You did. I mean, in many ways, you did. Like, you're 100% correct. There's not one. I mean, you have done literally everything in the sport. Everything the sport has had to offer, as Gilly said. Maybe the Sacfie brothers will take issue to me saying this, but I mean, unequivocally the greatest Cornell squash player of all time, and you'll go down as one of the great players in the history of our game. And it's And like we talked about earlier, there's another quote from that article about you talking about how your conduct on court and your sportsmanship is just as important as your on-court play. And I think that that's amazing. And I think that's we don't always see that at the top, at the highest level of our game. So I think you've been a great ambassador for the sport. And it's obviously been a pleasure to kind of watch you this year as I've entered the college squash universe. It's really been. It's been nothing but a joy, and we're ready to see what you do on the Pro Tour and in the National Squash League. And you're gonna be playing next weekend in Atlanta. I will be commentating your match. I won't be there. I'll be commentating remote with Mr. Sean Choi, and I'm looking forward to watching that. Can you preview That matchup a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about your excitement for the NSL coming up here?
I'm super excited for that NSL, you know. That's something that I didn't expect to be a part of. And just to be a part of a team with guys like Victor Cruin and, you know, Charlie Lee and Shah Jahan. And now we have Joe White and also Dylan, who played for Penn. So it's a great team of six of us. And I'm really excited. But unfortunately, I won't be playing next weekend.
I didn't realize that.
I have something, some event I have to attend that weekend. It's mandatory for seniors. But I'll be there for the next one in Louisville when we play the Nashville team.
The home match. That's all that matters. Versus Timmy at the big grudge match. And then hopefully the finals at Spectre
I'm super excited. That format sounds super exciting. And just to have guys like Victor on my team who have been fortunate enough to play in college squash and, you know, who's destroyed me every time we've played, and, you know, just to learn from him, and he's top 10 in the world. So, you know, I'm really excited, like, just chat with him and, you know, experience how he does everything to be the best and just learn from him. I'm the most excited about that. And obviously the rest of the guys are amazing as well. I've played Dylan, I've played Joe White before. Shah Jahan, not much. And Charlie, obviously, was my training partner. So I'm just really excited to be part of the NSL and play so many amazing players in that special format. So
I'm pretty sure that whoever's coaching the team here is going to be putting you into situations where he wants you to attack. So when you're talking about the cross court, Nick, in the national final, I'm sure more of those are going to be welcome for the team.
Always.
Going to be lethal on the power play.
Exactly.
So, and Gilly has a little special kind of treat/idea that we want to do at the end here. I have one more big question, and then we'll get into the dessert of the interview. But I want to ask you about a man that you're very familiar with. Many consider him a friend of the program, staple of the Squash University universe, if you will. And I'm, of course, talking about a man by the name of Yash Fati. And so Yash just wrapped up his junior year at Rochester. He came on the show to kind of recap. They won the home cup, B division, and he was kind of chatting about that. And as I understand it, you guys, I know this really through Taryn, who's my teammate. You guys were big rivals back home in the juniors. You would play in every final, and you kind of had a friendly kind of rivalry back in India in all of the junior events. And now, how cool is it that you're both playing junior squash, or that you're both playing college squash in the US, playing for these different prestigious institutions, and you got the opportunity to play this year? You got the better of him 3-1, but he's obviously an immensely talented player and is set to have a big senior year here before he ultimately turns pro, more likely than not. So I was hoping that you could tell us a little bit about your rivalry with Yash, and then what is that like playing him this season? Because once again, it's just such a small world, and I just really wanted to ask you about that, because I think it's such a cool thing that you guys now have played all these years growing up, and now you get to play in the CSA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Yash and I have played for the last, say, like 10-12 years in juniors, and we played some of the biggest finals, and we played two finals at the Asian. So the last time I played him was the Asian under-19 final in 2019. And then after that, I played him this season in college, which was like a long time. And yeah, I mean, he's been a player in the juniors who's pushed me to get better. Like I remember the first times when we played, I would always get the win against him, but then he started, you know, getting the better of me. And then that motivated me to, you know, kind of train harder and, you know, to push myself. And we had a great rivalry over the last 10 years of juniors, not just Yash, but also guys who played on Gilly's team, Tushar and Saksham, and, you know, all those guys have played so many times. Honestly, having my rivalry with Tushar has been crazy, because we played like 55, 60 times in juniors, which is insane.
That is crazy.
But yeah, the last couple of years playing Yash was always the hardest challenge. I remember he was the only one who really would trouble me when we played in the juniors in the end. And yeah, I mean, just having such a good group of guys from India at that level is always great. You know, we had a good representation in every college. Yeah, I mean, we had great rivalries, great matches. We learned a lot from each other. We pushed each other and we had great times together. And I'm excited to see what he does in his senior year at Rochester. And I hope he, you know, can perform extremely well and do well in the season, get some great wins, and hopefully individuals. I don't know. I hope. I don't know.
So here it's test time at Squash University, and I need you to answer these questions in the end, real quick. At Squash University. What's that?
Like a rapid fire.
Yeah, rapid fire time. Now, tough questions, tough hitting questions. Okay, and they're gonna come quick. Okay. Who was your favorite person to play against in college squash?
Yusuf Ibrahim.
Who was your least favorite person to play against in college squash?
Victor Kroon.
Best moment of your career from a team perspective at Cornell and why?
When we beat Columbia last year to get into the top eight. That was the most amazing moment.
Least favorite venue to play at in college squash?
Trinity's Glass Court.
Favorite college venue to play at?
Spectre Center Glass Court. Is that counted?
That counts.
Absolutely.
Favorite pre-match meal?
Bagel with egg, mushrooms, and spinach.
Excuse me?
I love that.
I am with you, Veer. You know what I had this morning before I hopped on here? I had a bagel.
Spinach, huh?
I just had a bagel. Bagel, cream cheese.
I tell you from where? From Spread Bagelry.
Spread Bagelry.
Spread
in
Bagelry,
Philly.
Remember.
My favorite spot.
I just had a bagel, cream cheese, spinach, tomato, onion. That was my breakfast. And I thought this would be great with a little like piece of egg on here as well. So I'm right there with you here. 100% agree. I will stand
wouldn't
up
be,
the whole time.
Wouldn't be mine. I wouldn't be mine. Funniest teammate you ever played with?
Oh. Charles Culhane.
Closest teammate in your 4 years?
That's a tough question. Can I say everyone? All of them are super close.
He's a Skillman Award winner. He's a nice guy. He's a nice guy, you know? It's just, if we had walkout music for pre-match introductions, yeah, what would your walkout music be?
Hall of Fame.
Nice. Okay. The script, classic.
And if there's a documentary being made, who plays Veer Chitrani in the documentary?
Biopic. Gilly. Veer would play himself in the documentary.
Yeah, sorry. In a motion picture.
Well,
I'm
being cheeky.
In the motion picture.
Tom Holland. I don't know.
Tom Holland. We got to get I don't know. Might be a little bit miscast. Tom Holland. We got to find some. There's got to be some like hot Bollywood stars that can come in, that can step in, and I think would do you justice. I would have to imagine. I'm trying to think who would do well for Veer. If anyone comes to mind.
What's the best piece of advice that you've ever received?
Work hard, stay humble, and appreciate everyone around you for everything they do for you.
Last question. You're going to dinner. It's a four-person table. It's you and three other people. Who are the three other people joining you at dinner? You can choose anyone. You can choose anyone.
Okay. Roger Federer. This guy named Virat Kohli, he's the greatest cricketer in India.
Yes.
And I need to be quick. The Weeknd, big fan.
Wow. That's nice. That's a diverse group. You have all your bases covered, tennis, cricket, and music. I have one last one though that I want to jump in here. What is the meanest thing David Palmer's ever said to you?
Ever said to me?
There's gotta be something. Just know it.
I'm just lazy. I don't know. Nothing worse than that.
Okay. All right.
Never been anything worse than that.
We love BP. We love BP.
That.
Okay.
Well, I would say his grade, Jackson, on our first final exam at Squash University, I'd give him around a 90. The breakfast 90.
We have
was...
to we have to like set the bar at a reasonable. We can't have grade inflation right off the bat, so we can't
give him an A plus. So maybe we'll drop it to an 80, 80, 85.
I think a B plus
is solid
B. Really healthy.
It's a solid B.
It's a really healthy start. I think anybody. Bonus points because he was quick. Because some people with this rapid fire, they don't know how to be quick. They hem and they haw. He did a very good job. He was very fast. I'll give him some bonus points. There's some extra credit. So I think he's B plus A minus range for sure. I think he did well. He's passing. He's definitely passing. No doubt about that. Veer, as we wrap up, we like to ask all our guests to close out these interviews. If you had to choose just one, what would be the number one thing above all else that you love most about college squash?
Just the team spirit, the camaraderie everyone shares with each other, and the insane atmosphere of matches, the amount of people being around.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well,
Beer, thanks for being here today. Really appreciate it. I'm going to be one of your biggest fans as you head off to the PSA tour full time. Sad to see you leave college squash, but you did beat Penn three times this year, so not so sad. No, it's been a pleasure watching you grow as a squash player and also as a tremendous human being, an ambassador for our sport. So thank you for everything that you've done to kind of raise the profile of our game. And I know you're going to do great things in the future, bud.
No matter how hard you try, yeah, say everybody's going to die someday. Yeah, but life goes on. Yeah, life goes on. It's life. Yeah, my thoughts try to bring me down. Yeah. But I can never let it get in my way, yeah. Cause life goes on, cause life goes on. It's life. I've been tripping over shit, feel like it's been my whole life. I'm stepping over it, I loop de loop and pull my shit tight. I'm too nice, they say that we always gonna finish last. I'm too hype, ain't nothing to me to make a hater mad. A, B, C, is he is 1, 2, 3. Yeah. No bad vibes gonna affect my chi. Yeah. Said I'm so unique, got fans overseas. Can't stop me, Skywalker, got the force.